Chapter 6. At 7 a.m., Stiles wakes the others. They take quick showers and eat some breakfast before splitting into two groups. Isaac and Mac go to check in with Allison and Scott, and the rest of them head down to the airport. Victoria has given them specific instructions on where to go. Each of them has a backpack full of things, but they've all packed light. Stiles, with his backpack and his laptop bag, along with the cooler, has more than anyone else. The pilot is a friendly, competent guy who introduces himself as Franklin. Stiles is moderately interested in piloting, and since it's a small plane, Franklin offers to let him sit up front and watch during takeoff. Stiles watches in interest as he goes through the pre-flight checklist. "We'll be touching down in Peoria's municipal airport at about 3 p.m. local time," he says, after they're in the air. "Cool," Stiles says, and heads into the back to get some sleep. He's never been on a small aircraft before, and he's surprised at how much more roomy it is than a commercial airliner. He supposes that probably has a lot to do with how much they're paying for it. Despite how tired he is, sleep proves elusive. He wonders how Chris is doing, whether or not Phil is okay, what's happening. After a while, he gives up on sleep and wanders back up front to strike up a conversation with Franklin about what types of planes he's flown and how difficult it is to get a pilot's license. They've been in the air for about an hour when their conversation peters out. Stiles stays up in the front, watching the scenery, thinking things over. Another 10 minutes or so have passed when he hears a noise that breaks him out of his reverie. He glances over at Franklin to see he's breathing somewhat heavily. "Hey, are you okay?"
"Yeah, I just suddenly feel a little dizzy," Franklin says.
Every alarm bell in Stiles' head goes off. His gaze flickers to the row of gauges and buttons and thinks abstractly, "So this is how I die." He banishes the thought immediately. "Does this thing have autopilot? I mean, could you go lie down for a while?" It looks like Franklin is about to answer, but he suddenly jerks backwards, his body going rigid. Stiles swears and shouts, "Boyd! Erica!" And the two of them crowd into the cockpit. Erica's response is an immediate, "Why the fuck is our pilot having a seizure?" And she would know if anyone would. She and Boyd hastily get him out of his seat, lying him down on the floor as his body convulses. "I can't even get my driver's license, and this guy is flying a plane?"
"No medic alert," Boyd says, rolling him onto his side.
Stiles looks helplessly at the rows of controls, but for the moment they seem okay. The plane cruises along serenely as if it has no idea that nobody is flying it. He grabs the radio and says, "Mayday, mayday, this is a plane that probably has a callback number, but I don't know it. Does anyone copy?" He releases the button on the radio, but hears nothing but static.
"Okay, this is bad," Boyd says,
and people in the back are clamoring to know what's going on. "How is he?" Stiles asks, shaking the radio as if this will help. Boyd looks up, already starting chest compressions.
"Stiles, he's not breathing."
"You're fucking..." Stiles bites off the words because they won't help. "Okay, okay, we'll handle this. Try to move him to the back. Keep doing, you know..." He gestures wildly, scrambling over them and into the back. "Danny, you're good with computers. Do you know anything about how to fly a plane?"
"You were joking, right?" Danny asks, eyes wide.
"Come on, you guys. We all play video games. Someone must know something about how to fly a plane," Stiles says.
Yeah. If you don't know how, then don't," Danny retorts. Stiles chews on his lip.
"Lydia?" She heads up to the cockpit with him. Franklin has explained some of the dials and gauges, so he isn't completely clueless. They manage to puzzle out what a few other things mean from context. Stiles is beginning to think they might actually get through this when the plane gives a strange little shudder.
"Oh no," Lydia says, and slides into the pilot's seat.
"What just happened?" Stiles demands.
"I think the engine just crapped out," she says, and they both watch as the plane starts to lose altitude.
We need to land. Now, she says, and then points the plane sharply downwards.
There are yelps from the back.
What? Why? Stiles asks, clinging to her seat. Can't we just glide?
Lydia shakes her head.
No, we'll lose speed and then we'll stall. And if we stall, we drop like a rock.
How can we stall if the engine is...
Aerodynamic stall. It's different from mechanical stall.
It's what happens when there isn't enough air flowing around the wings to generate lift.
Trust me, if we point the nose down, gravity will keep your speed up and lift will keep us in the air. It's going to be the difference between a crash and a crash landing.
Okay, you just do what you can, Stiles says. He's startled when Derek grabs him.
Oh my God, what?
We need to get you off this plane, Derek says. There are a couple of parachutes we found in the back. The rest of us can probably survive a crash landing, but you are human.
Right, right.
Stiles scrambles towards the back of the plane and grabs one of the parachutes. He sees a second one and says,
You stay with the others. I'll take Erica with me, he adds.
And Derek nods, grabbing the girl by the elbow. Stiles has the parachute halfway on when a terrible thought seizes him.
Wait, no, I can't.
What? Why not? Stiles, if we crash...
Think about this, Stiles says.
He takes the backpack off and thrusts it at Derek.
It can't be a coincidence that our pilot dropped dead. None of this can be a coincidence. Someone poisoned our pilot, took out our radio, and sabotaged our engine. What are the fucking odds that they wouldn't think to cut a few straps on the parachutes?
Jesus. Derek pushes both hands through his hair. We can't know.
And there isn't time or room to figure it out, Stiles says. No, I'd rather take my chances in the crash than fall from a plane without a parachute. Thank you very much. Everybody strap in, Lydia shouts from the front. We're at 20,000 and dropping fast.
Everyone scrambles for a seat with a seatbelt. Derek and Boyd stay up, trying to strap down all of their luggage as securely as they can.
Okay, guys, Stiles says. I know that people make fun of the crash position, but it's a real thing, and they developed it for a reason. Seat straight, bend over, put your arms over your head. 10,000 feet, Lydia calls.
And Derek and Boyd both get themselves strapped in. Their unfortunate pilot's body is now strapped into a seat as well, to keep it from flying around.
We are going to bounce a few times, like skipping a stone, she shouts to them. So hold on until we've stopped moving entirely. Do not try to get up. Please stay seated until the ride has completely stopped moving, Stiles mutters,
and Erica giggles hysterically. A few seconds later, they hit the earth. It's like nothing Stiles has ever felt before, and he's lived through a lot, including an earthquake that had rippled up to Beacon Hills in their junior year. The noise is incredible in and of itself, and the jolt of the impact makes him feel like his bones bounced entirely out of his body. They bounce back up and his stomach careens around his insides, like on a particularly violent roller coaster. Then they slam back down again. It happens once, twice, three times. There's a sound of screaming metal and all kinds of terrible smells. And then, finally, the plane shudders to a halt. Silence falls, only it's not really silence. There's heavy breathing and dirt showering all around them and pieces of the plane still falling off. But compared to the noise of the crash itself, it's as quiet as snowfall at night. Stiles coughs a few times. It feels like his entire throat is coated in dust.
Stiles?
It's Derek's voice calling out for him. Because, of course it is. Stiles shakes himself and croaks.
Yeah, calling roll. Erica?
Here!
She coughs from somewhere behind him.
Danny?
I'm okay, Danny says.
Boyd?
Yeah, over here,
Boyd says.
Lydia?
Fuck!
Lydia groans.
She's okay, Boyd adds. Stiles, stay where you are. You shouldn't move until we've checked you out.
Yeah,
Stiles says. At least he's not upside down.
He's got what's sure to be a monster of a bruise on his face, but he's surprisingly intact, given what just happened. He waits patiently while Boyd and Danny come over and make sure he can feel his toes and that his sternum and spine seem intact, before they undo his seatbelt and he wobbles to his feet. The rest of them are similarly bruised and battered, but he can see their wounds healing as he watches. Lydia was the worst hurt, being in the pilot's seat, and she has a few gashes from shattered glass. She's shaky but vertical, leaning heavily on Danny.
"Well," Erica says, as they stagger out of the plane, "my dad is never gonna let me live this one down."
Stiles gives a snort and looks around. The scenery is interesting, but not encouraging. They're in the middle of a flat plain that's surprisingly white. There are mountains distant on the horizon and hardly any vegetation. The sky is bright blue without a cloud to be seen, and it's just warm enough that it's going to be uncomfortable once they've been walking for a while. He takes his cell phone out and is unsurprised to see that they don't have any service.
"So where the hell are we?" Danny asks, rubbing one hand over his face and holding a bottle of water to Lydia's mouth so she can take slow sips.
"Utah," Stiles says, looking around. The others turn and look at him. "This is the Great Salt Lake Desert, a dry lake bed notable for salt deposits, giving it the unique white crusty look."
He notices the others staring at him and says, "What? Rocks are interesting!" Everyone starts laughing. They can't help it. The adrenaline rush has them close to hysterics. And after a while, they all just end up sitting there, laughing their asses off. It takes several minutes for them to calm down.
"You did always try to tell us that taking those classes would pay off,"
Derek says, shaking his head, eyes still crinkled from smiling.
"Yeah, well, it's not much of a payment," Stiles says. "We're in the middle of 4,000 square miles of nothing. And it's too big an area for me to say, oh, if we walk east for a few hours, we'll get to Salt Lake City. We might be too far south. I don't know if I-80 is south or north of us, so we can't aim for that."
"So what do we do?"
Boyd asks. Stiles thinks about it.
"We head east," he says. "Eventually we'll hit I-15 that way. It could be as many as 100 miles. If we hit something else before then or get cell service, all the better. But one way or another, we'll find civilization."
Lydia grimaces. "Average speed on foot is 3 miles an hour. Even if we can go faster than that, you can't. That means we can probably only cover 30 to 40 miles in a day, with breaks."
"Well, there isn't much we can do about that," Stiles says. "At least I packed sandwiches."
"Let's see what we've got,"
Boyd says. All of them, except Stiles and Lydia, head back into the plane to see what they can salvage. They drag out their bags and the cooler.
"No emergency kit,"
Boyd says, when Stiles gives him a questioning look.
"Whoever sabotaged the plane probably took it."
He opens up the cooler. There are a dozen sandwiches inside, 2 for each of them, along with 4 apples and 4 oranges and a bag of muffins.
"I'm less worried about food and more worried about drinks," Lydia says. "This isn't the type of environment that has a lot of water. Or any water at all."
"Yeah," Stiles says. He doesn't say anything else because the answer isn't great. He hadn't been thinking about this, obviously. He had packed drinks, but they were sodas. He knows that caffeine dehydrates, though he supposes that it's better than nothing. As it turns out, Lydia has 2 bottles of water because she favors that smart water, and Derek has 20 ounces of water that he's drunk about half of. Erica has a bottle of Arizona iced tea, which is basically sugar water. They share this amongst their packs and put Lydia in charge of rationing.
"Okay, everyone turn your cell phones off," Stiles says, checking his again. "I'm going to leave mine on and check it for signal periodically. When my battery starts to run low, I'll turn mine off and we can use someone else's. That way, if anyone tries to call us, there will always be one on."
Everyone nods and goes to do as they're told. Stiles looks around and says,
Well, no time like the present, I guess.
Wait, Erica says. Every time you read about people getting lost in the wilderness, the officials always say, stay where you are. Should we even try to go anywhere? This, she gestures to their surroundings, is pretty empty land. Someone will see the wreckage if they fly over, looking for us.
Under normal circumstances, you are absolutely correct, Stiles says. But these are not normal circumstances. Our pilot was poisoned and our plane was sabotaged. We have to assume that whoever did this has a rough idea of where we're going to crash, and they'll probably come looking to make sure there were no survivors.
He starts walking, and the others follow him.
I have no interest in being here when that happens. The good guys will be looking for us too, but they aren't yet. They won't even know we're missing until we don't call from Chicago, and they won't be expecting us to do that for hours yet. Better to get moving.
What about the pilot? Derek asks, though he's following Stiles. Do we just leave him?
Stiles sighs. I don't like to. He was a nice guy. But we can't really carry him with us. And Erica's right. Someone will spot the wreckage, so let's try not to worry about it too much.
How could he have been poisoned? Danny asks. I mean, did someone give him something beforehand?
There are plenty of poisons that don't affect you right away, Lydia says. It could also depend on what formulation it was given in, or what he had it with. There's really no way to know without an autopsy, which we're really ill-equipped to give.
Actually, it was cyanide, Boyd says. His mouth tasted like almonds. I noticed when I was giving him CPR.
Cyanide usually has an immediate effect, doesn't it? Erica asks.
Yeah, but someone could have put it in a time-release capsule or something, Stiles says. If he took any sort of medication, maybe they swapped it out.
Erica shivers. That's mean, tricking him into taking it himself. As usual, we're up against someone, I hate to use the word diabolical, but if the shoe fits.
Stiles shakes his head and keeps walking. Save your breath and your moisture, guys. It's gonna be a long day. Allison wakes up with a start, wondering when she fell asleep. She's curled up in the corner of the clinic, on the cold tile. She sits up, her body aching from sleeping on the hard surface, and sees that she was leaning on Scott, who's in his wolf form. That explains why she's in the waiting room. Not the clinic itself. She remembers going out to update him after her father had finally fallen into a restless sleep himself, and Scott had persuaded her to lie down for a few minutes. She must have fallen asleep. She checks her watch to see that it's just past 9 o'clock in the morning. It had been nearly dawn before she had fallen asleep, so she's been asleep for 3, maybe 4 hours. She feels stiff and uncoordinated, mentally foggy and headachy. Her stomach growls. All of that is unimportant. She starts to ease the door to the clinic open to see how her father is doing. Hopefully he'll still be asleep. As soon as she gets the door open, she realizes he isn't. And she stops moving because she can hear him talking.
Tell me again.
He says. His voice is rough from exhaustion.
Okay, Victoria replies, and she starts telling Chris about moving to Beacon Hills, about Allison meeting Scott, about Derek Hale, about Kate. Allison stands there in the doorway, listening.
And that's true?
Chris asks, his voice cracking a little, as Victoria tells him about Kate's death.
That happened.
Yes, Chris, Victoria says. That's true.
Okay, keep going.
Victoria does, explaining about Peter and Gerard and Stiles becoming the Alpha.
And we don't trust Stiles, Chris says.
No, honey, Victoria says. We trust Stiles. He's our ally.
but he just... he wants us to think that, Chris says.
No, Victoria says, again, patiently. That's just what the spell made you think. Styles is our friend. He can be trusted.
Allison leans against the doorframe, resting her head there, as her father says,
You're sure?
I'm sure, Chris. Trust me.
Chris lets out a breath.
Tell me again,
he says, and Victoria does, starting back at the beginning and going over all of it.
We trust Scott?
He asks. Yes, we trust Scott, Victoria tells him.
I think I tried to hurt him yesterday, Chris says, when he came in here. I'm not sure.
His voice rises a notch.
Was that real?
Yes, you did, but we stopped you, Victoria says. It's fine.
Chris lets out another slow breath.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm just confused, and I don't trust myself. Don't know what's real.
You have nothing to apologize for, Chris.
Victoria's voice is firm, and Allison can detect just a hint of anger underneath it, at the people who did this.
None of this is your fault, but you have to trust me, all right? If you can't trust yourself, trust me. I'm the rock you can set your back against. Always.
God, I love you, Chris says in response. I love you so much, and I trust you.
Good.
So we trust Scott,
Chris says after a moment.
Yes, we trust Scott, and we trust Styles.
And you're sure?
Yes, honey, I'm sure.
Allison is startled when the door to the clinic swings open, and she whips around with one of her daggers at the ready to see Isaac and Matt coming in. She drops her arm to her side.
Jesus, she says. Sorry, guys, you startled me.
No worries, Max says. We brought breakfast.
Thanks, Allison says, as her stomach gives another gurgle.
Scott is on his feet, woken by the noise and the smell of food, and he shifts back to his human form and pulls some clothes on. Allison looks at the door to the back room and says,
I think we can go in. Just take it slow. No sudden moves.
She eases the door open and pokes her head inside.
Mom, can we come in? We have breakfast.
Sure, Victoria says,
and the four of them ease inside. Allison walks over and gives her father a hug. He clutches at her tightly for a few minutes.
Styles made muffins,
Isaac says, setting a box down.
Lemon poppy seed or banana nut.
Chris looks at Victoria. We can't eat those, can we?
Yes, we can, Victoria says. Styles makes excellent muffins.
I'm telling him you said that, Allison says, grinning at her mother. Mac and Isaac have also made a stop at a local diner and brought some scrambled eggs, bacon, and hash browns to round out the meal. Isaac is holding a gallon of coffee and a gallon of orange juice.
Oh, I brought this for you, he says, taking a crumpled paper bag out of his pocket. That tea you like, that you got in Wyoming.
Awesome, Allison says. She's never quite gotten fond of the taste of the tea her great Aunt Vanessa had given her, but it really does do wonders to improve mental acuity and get rid of the fogginess that a night of poor sleep results in. I hope Dr. Deaton has a microwave and some cups in the back. Dad, do you want any tea?
Where's it from?
Chris asks, his hands clutching at the edge of the table.
It's from my family in Wyoming, Victoria tells him. It's safe. You've had it before.
Okay, then yes. Thank you, Allison.
Allison drops a kiss on her father's forehead before heading into the clinic's break room. She finds several mugs and fills two of them with water before putting them in the microwave to heat up. It's not the best way to make tea, but without a stove, it'll do.
So Stiles went to Wyoming?
Chris asks, looking between his wife and daughter.
No. Stiles went to Illinois to talk to your cousin Henry about the fact that he used his 12-year-old son in an act of war and as an accessory to black magic, Victoria says, with that glint in her eyes that makes everyone in the room very glad that they are not Henry and Rose Argent.
But he's not concerned so much with Henry as he is with whoever put them up to it, Allison says. There's someone moving behind the players here that's using the hunters as pawns to get to us, to Stiles specifically.
Because Stiles is bad?
Chris says, then shakes his head.
No, we trust Stiles.
He takes a deep breath and rubs at his temples.
But people think he's bad, that he's corrupted me. Right?
Right, Victoria says, squeezing his hand.
How do we know, though? Chris asks. How do we know that Stiles is a good guy?
Isaac and Scott shift uncomfortably, but it's Mac who speaks up, who says,
because he saves people, even when it would be easier not to. He saved me.
Victoria nods.
Do you remember when you started trusting Stiles?
She asks, and Chris nods, but then shakes his head.
It was because of Sebastian Stone, she says. When he did his final spell, and he used an innocent man to fuel it, to hurt everyone in Beacon Hills.
You remember that? She adds, and Chris nods.
Stiles could have killed Harris to end the spell, but he chose instead to redirect the spell into himself. He risked his own life rather than kill an innocent in order to save everyone in Beacon Hills. And when we got home that night, you said to me, Vicky, I know it's crazy, but I think we can trust him.
Chris lets out a slow breath. Right. Okay. I remember that. I just thought... I don't know what I thought.
He rubs both hands over his face.
It was like I remembered it happening, but somehow the conclusion seemed wrong, even though there was no reason for that.
It's all right, Chris, Victoria says, complacently cutting her eggs with the edge of her fork. It was magic. When things don't make sense, just ask me.
Chris nods and starts eating.
What if Henry and Rose won't talk to him?
He'll goad them into it, Allison says. Henry and Rose are stupidly easy to goad. He'll tell them that he knows it wasn't their plan because they're too stupid to come up with it on their own. Trust me, Dad, he'll get everything they know without ever lifting a finger against them.
Okay, so what are we doing in the meantime?
Chris asks.
Nothing, Dad, Allison says. You have to stay here. Until we find the sorcerer and make sure we get your hair back, you can't leave Deaton's clinic.
Isaac looks up.
Couldn't we put a circle of mountain ash around your house or something?
Yeah, but how would we get him there? Allison says. He'd be exposed during the ride. Even 10 minutes would be too much.
I'm fine here, Chris says. Don't worry about me.
He frowns.
Where are Phil and Jake?
Sheriff Stilinski's taken custody of them for the moment, Victoria says. Though I think he's at work and letting Melissa keep an eye on them. Am I right, Scott?
Scott nods. Yeah, because Papa Stilinski knew he wasn't going to be home a lot of the time, so my mom took a few days off from work.
Chris frowns. Do we trust Sheriff Stilinski?
Yes, Victoria says. You're actually very good friends.
Do we trust Jake? And Phil?
We trust Jake. We don't trust Phil.
Victoria's voice is a little tight with anger.
I don't blame him for what he did. He was obviously heavily indoctrinated and emotionally manipulated by those wastes of oxygen that call themselves his parents. But no, for the moment at least, we do not trust him. When this is over, we're going to send him to stay with Julian.
And Julian's on his way here to get him?
Chris asks.
No,
He was going to come here and pick him up, but instead he's going to Illinois in case Stiles needs help with Henry and Rose, Allison says.
Do we trust Julian?
Yes, we trust your cousin Julian, Victoria says.
So there's nothing we need to do?
Chris says. Not at the moment, no, Victoria says.
Okay.
Chris sets down his muffin, rubs his hands over his face. He looks up at Victoria with a pleading expression.
Tell me again. I'm sorry, I'm just... Tell me again who we trust.
Don't apologize, Victoria says. I'll tell you as many times as I need to tell you.